pavement, mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement, thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, batch out laid off, says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway, looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills, you only got 10. Maggie comes fleet-foot, face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the man, he said it must bust an early man, orders from the DA. Look out, kid, don't matter what you did, but walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows, better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash your plain clothes, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows.
Yeah ho, what's going on, College Park?
Hey guys, what's going on?
It's WMUC-FM College Park, Set Fresh Radio Peas. Who do I got with me? I got James.
What's going on?
Who do we got?
A little Matt Johnson.
We got Matt Johnson. You want to say hi, man?
Yeah, how's it going, College Park?
Special guest here from, he went on a trip to Hong Kong, right?
Yep.
And I think a little later we're going to talk about your experience, you know, get into whatever it is you want to talk about. Not something we're all familiar with, at least me personally. But I guess for now, you guys want to get into some headlines?
Yeah, sure.
It's that Fresh Radio piece, counterbalance to the fair imbalance.
Yeah, what's good, guys? I got a headline from the Baltimore Examiner. 65-foot high dam in Rockville, Maryland that began leaking after last week's rainfall across the Northeast has been declared unsafe and will require monitoring during future storms. The heavy rains raised the water levels of Lake Needwood to 23 feet above its normal capacity, causing water to pour through the base of the lake's dam and prompting the evacuation of more than 2,000 people. Flood plans for this kind of situation say that if the dam breaks, it could send floodwaters into the low-lying areas at a depth of up to 19 feet. Although the seepage has stopped, residents returned, and the water level was expected to return to normal within 2 days. State officials said Wednesday that the dam was unsafe. That means they will have to hire engineers to investigate its long-term safety and monitor it during storms. Residents are being encouraged to sign up for a text message alert system through Montgomery County's website. And current patrols in the area will continue, and local police and fire departments will also alert the area if there is any immediate danger. I got another headline from the Examiner, and this is about a protest at the NSA headquarters at Fort Meade. 13 anti-war activists were given citations Saturday for protesting outside Fort Meade. The activists were stopped on the road near the NSA entrance that provides access to two museums that are open to the public, Max Abzuski of the Pledge of Resistance Baltimore said. We were on, I would argue, public property. But Don Weber, an NSA spokesman, said Fort Meade policy specifies that protesters submit a written request for a permit. The NSA also used law enforcement agencies, including the Baltimore Police Department, to track members of the city anti-war group as they prepared for protests outside the sprawling Fort Meade facility. An internal NSA email posted on two internet sites this week shows how operatives with the Baltimore Intel Unit, quote-unquote, provided a minute-by-minute account of the Pledge of Resistance preparations for July 3rd, 2004 protest. An attorney for the demonstrators said he obtained the document through the discovery process from NSA. And, Christian will follow me up with some local headlines.
Yo, yeah, I actually just have one special one because I wanted to take more time to talk about a national headline, go in-depth on that. And so, to start it off and to finish it off, Iraq war veteran and a 71-year-old woman at the Independence Day parade were arrested. This was the 4th of July parade down here in D.C. Jeffrey Millard, 25, an Iraq war vet who served on active combat duty for 13 months, walked into a break in the 4th of July parade with a sign that read, "Support the troops, bring them home now." He was dressed in his military jacket with Iraq Veterans Against the War on the back of his jacket and his many medals pinned to the front. He was stopped by the police, and when he tried again to enter the parade with his anti-war message, he was subsequently arrested. As he tried to explain to the police that he simply wanted to march in the parade with his message, The crowd chanted, quote, "He earned the right," end quote, and "Let the vets in" behind him. "When I was in Iraq," he says, "I used to dream of going home, getting on with my life. But I can't be silent now, knowing the horror of what is going on over there," said Millard. "It is my duty now to speak out against this immoral, illegal war. That's why I felt it was my right and my duty to march in the 4th of July parade," he said. In addition to Millard's arrest, Chloe John Paul, 71, of Code Pink, was also arrested. She attempted to enter the march with her sign after Millard and was also arrested by the police. While she was being arrested, John Paul said to the police, quote, "I'm a 71-year-old woman. I don't want to be arrested. But if you're preventing our veterans from speaking for peace by arresting them, well, you'll have to arrest me too." Both Millard and John Paul are on their first day of a hunger strike against the war in Iraq back on the 4th. It's called the Troops Home Fast, and they're joining thousands of others in fasting this month against the war to bring the troops home and against any future wars of aggression. And so, James and Matt, would you guys like to get into those international headlines?
Yeah, I got a headline from the BBC. 18 cotton farmers in India's Maharashtra state have committed suicide despite a recent relief package announced by the Indian Prime Minister. Distressed farmers in India are heavily in debt and need immediate relief, which has not arrived. Campaigners say the farmers are forced to borrow money from moneylenders to buy seeds and then are thrown into crisis after crops fail because of drought. More than 600 farmers have committed suicide in the state's Vidarbha region since June last year, and hundreds more in Maharashtra in recent years. India has seen 22,000 farmers commit suicide over the past decade. Earlier this month, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh announced aid worth nearly $815 million for farmers. The package provides little help for the present, though, because it is meant for projects which will take 3 to 5 years to complete. The farmers are also demanding an end to the free market regime introduced last year following the World Trade Organization agreement. Last year, the British government recently released data on recipients of subsidies under the European Union's Common Agricultural Policy, or CAP. The figures reveal that CAP's subsidiaries go primarily not to struggling smaller family-owned farms, but to large agribusinesses and wealthy landowners. The sugar refinery Tate & Lyle, which supplies 50% of UK sugar, is the single largest beneficiary, netting a total of $223 million. About halfway down the list of the top recipients, which includes the Queen and Prince Charles, stands the Duke of Marlborough, who receives a generous $895,000 annually for his Blenheim estate. And staying on the trade issue, I got another headline from the BBC. World Bank President Paul Wolfowitz has called on leaders to push for an agreement on a deal to free up global trade at the forthcoming G8 summit in Russia. The G8 is made up of Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, Russia, UK, and the US, and they will be joined by leaders of the so-called Plus 5 group of major developing nations, which is China, India, Brazil, South Africa, and Mexico. Wolfowitz said, "We can work to lift millions from poverty, boost developing countries' income, improve global market access, and reduce taxpayer and consumer costs for all, or allow the whole effort to collapse with harm to everyone. A collective pledge by the U.S. to reduce everyone's subsidies, by the European Union to improve market access, and the Plus 5 members to limit tariffs on manufacturers could help seal the deal." Poor nations argue that the world's richest countries must open up their agricultural markets and end farm subsidies before they open up their manufacturing and services market to global competition. A protest organized by the Farragut Squares Collective, taking place all this week, as fighting against a plan that will be proposed, which calls for global expansion of nuclear power and trillions of dollars in new subsidies to coal, oil, and gas corporations worldwide. And you should check out our website, and we'll have the we'll post the website for that protest if you want to get involved with that. But before that, Christian has some headlines.
Yo, and yeah, to quickly finish it off for our first international headline from me. You have Mexico's leftist candidate who presents evidence of frauds from The Independent. Mexico's leftist presidential candidate prepared to launch his legal battle to overturn his conservative rival's apparent victory on Sunday when his lawyers submit what they claim is proof of vote fraud to the nation's top electoral court. The move by Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador, who appears to have narrowly lost the vote to ruling party candidate Felipe Calderon, comes a day after the fiery leftist held a massive rally in Mexico's historic center and called on his supporters to keep his hopes alive. The evidence to be presented to the Federal Election Tribunal includes alleged proof of computer manipulation of results and that votes weren't counted, his party says. The legal appeals won't seek to annul the July 2nd election, but to force authorities to conduct a manual vote-by-vote recount. Over 100,000 supporters rallying in Mexico City on Saturday chanted, quote, vote by vote, end quote. Election officials say Calderon beat López Obrador by less than 244,000 votes out of 41 million ballots, or a margin of about 6%. But Obrador remains convinced that he won. He has millions of devoted followers who believe only he can help Mexico's poor and downtrodden. In his views over street protests as an effective means of pressuring the government, the courts is clearly seen. Obrador's claims include allegations that Vicente Fox, a former president, used government funds to support Felipe Calderon, the candidate of Fox's conservative National Action Party. And finally, fresh fighting has occurred in the Somalia capital. In Mogadishu, heavy fighting has broke out with the Islamic militia using rockets and artillery. The Islamists, who control most of the south of the country, are trying to take an area in the city south that is controlled by warlord Abdi Kebdid. Sorry if I can't pronounce that. Eyewitnesses spoke of heavy casualties, with up to 60 people reported killed and 100 injured in 2 days of clashes. Meanwhile, hundreds of Ethiopian troops and 70 trucks are reported to have crossed into Somalia. Details of the incident are still sketchy, but eyewitnesses say the troops crossed the frontier in the Gedo region of southern Somalia. Details of the weak transitional government based in the town of Baidoa has had close links with Ethiopia since it was formed in Kenya 2 years ago. There are reports of civilians being caught in the clashes and around the Kafr area of the city after appeals for Kadid's men to disarm failed. That was from the BBC News, and now I'm going to get into a little song. going on College Park. It's that fresh radio piece, counterbalance to the fair imbalance. And we're going to get into our statistics. So, guys, if you want to crowd around me and take a look or something, we can get right on this, all right? So the first stat we've got is 250,000 people. And what does that stand for? The number of people addressed Saturday by López Obrador of Mexico's recent presidential election. The guy we were just talking about, the leftist candidate to the opposition. He was the opposition party to the ruling party. He recently addressed, yes, 250,000 people over in Mexico City. And Matt, would you like to talk about this next stat right here?
So we got 93, and that's the age of Frank Ziegler, the last socialist mayor of a major American city. That's Milwaukee. And 3, that's the number of terms Ziegler served, so there is an alternative.
Racial gap in income distribution is widening. African American families now earn less of a percentage of the earnings of white families today than they did 6 years ago.
That was from the Economic Policy Institute. Let me get into my little Disney tune right here. The Jungle Book, no less. I wanna be like you. And to finish off these stats real fast, 1% of people in color in U.S. radio newsrooms has plunged by nearly two-thirds in the last 8 years. Under 7% of workers in radio newsrooms are people of color, which is down from 16%. In 1998, this is from the Radio and Television News Directors Association. And finally, 4 is how many years ago Enron filed bankruptcy after years of defrauding its own employees and investors. How many people were put out of work by this bankruptcy? Over 4,000. And what was the value of the company's stock when it dropped? It was from $90 to 30 cents. And how many employees of Enron lost their life savings? Thousands. Ken Lay and his family rank among also President Bush's biggest career financial backers. This is according to the Center for Public Integrity. Enron was Bush's top career donor until 2004. And 6 is how many weeks ago Mr. Lay was convicted. On how many counts of conspiracy, security frauds, wire fraud, bank fraud, and making false statements to banks? 10 counts. 10 counts. And, interesting enough, and no disrespect for the man, but he died recently, in light of being involved in one of the largest corporate frauds in U.S. history. So those are our statistics for the day, and I think James actually has one more, sorry.
Yeah, this is from OneWorld.net. Nearly one-third of the largest U.S.-based multinational corporations either failed to pay any taxes or managed to get a refund in at least one of the years between 2001 and 2003. In the past 20 years, industrial countries have witnessed a 15% decline in the rate of corporate tax. As for developing countries, where tax havens are created by governments to attract investment and exploited by companies, often in violation of international labor standards, the amount of loss in corporate tax payment is estimated to be around $50 billion a year.
And those are the ends of our it's the end of our stats, and here comes a PSA.
In the year 1612, Captain John Smith explored the Chesapeake Bay. He saw oysters thick as stones, nearly unbroken forest as far as the eye could see. Today, 99% of the oysters are gone. Some 50% of the forests are gone for good. We'll never get it back to what it was in 1612, but we can make it better. Support the Environmental Fund for Maryland in your workplace giving campaign. We're on the web at www.efm.org.
All right, yeah, we got to come back at you with some national headlines. I think Matt's going to actually read them here.
All right, So we got According to a watchdog group, there's more neo-Nazis in the military, as reported by the Washington Post and the New York Times. A decade after the Pentagon declared a zero-tolerance policy for racist hate groups, recruiting shortfalls caused by the war in Iraq have allowed large numbers of neo-Nazis and skinhead extremists, that's a quote, to infiltrate the military, according to a watchdog organization. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which tracks racist and right-wing militia groups, estimated that the numbers could run into the thousands. The center called on Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld to appoint a task force to study the problem, declare a new zero-tolerance policy, and strictly enforce it. The report said that neo-Nazi groups like the National Alliance sought to enroll followers in the Army to get training for a race war. The report also quotes Scott Barfield, a Defense Department investigator, saying, "Recruiters are knowingly allowing neo-Nazis and white supremacists to join the armed forces, and commanders don't remove them from the military even after we positively identify them as extremists or gang members." In other news, FBI adds to wiretap wish lists from CNET. A far-reaching proposal from the FBI, made public Friday, would require all broadband internet providers, including cable modem and DSL companies, to rewire their networks to support easy wiretapping by police. If approved as drafted, the proposal could dramatically expand the scope of the agency's wiretap powers, raise costs for cable broadband companies, and complicate internet product development. If approved as drafted, the proposal could dramatically expand the scope of the agency's wiretap powers, raise costs for cable broadband companies, and complicate internet product development. It also calls for backdoors into much of the internet so that the draft bill would place the FBI's net surveillance push on solid legal footing. At the moment, it's ensnared in a legal challenge from universities and some technology companies that claim the Federal Communications Commission's broadband surveillance directives exceed what Congress has authorized. The FBI claims that expanding the 1994 Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement Act is necessary to thwart criminals and terrorists who have turned to technologies like Voice over Internet Protocol, or VOIP.
Yeah, this is that Fresh Radio piece, listening to WMUC, and Christian's going to finish up our headline.
Yeah, this is Mr. Melendez right here, and I've got some national headlines for you. One of those is a special one, but I'll get into that at the end. So, real fast, this is from the New York Times. Congress says program was disclosed by informant. The chairman of the House Intelligence Committee said Sunday that the Bush administration briefed the panel on a, quote, significant, end quote, intelligence program only after a government whistleblower alerted him to its existence. And he pressed President Bush for details. The chairman, Representative Peter Hoekstra, Republican of Michigan, wrote in a May 18th letter to Mr. Bush, first disclosed publicly on Saturday by the New York Times, that the administration's failure to notify his committee of this program and others could be, quote, a violation of law, end quote. Mr. Hoekstra expanded on his concerns in a television appearance on Sunday, saying that when the administration withholds information from Congress, quote, "I take it very, very seriously," end quote. Mr. Hoekstra and other officials would not discuss the nature of the undisclosed intelligence programs, but officials have said he was not referring to the NSA's wiretapping operation or to the Treasury Department's bank monitoring program, both of which he was informed about. Mr. Hoekstra made clear on Sunday that he was particularly troubled by the failure to notify the Intelligence Committee of one particular major program. Quote, "We can't be briefed on every little thing that they are doing, but in this case there was at least one major, what I consider significant, activity that we had not been briefed on, that we have now been briefed on, and I want to set the standard there that it is not optional for this president or any president or people in the executive community not to keep the intelligence committees fully informed of what they are doing." The White House declined to comment on the issue Sunday, but said last week it would continue to work closely with Mr. Hoekstra and intelligence communities. In the intelligence community. Also, the Army has charged Lieutenant Aaron Watada, who wouldn't go to Iraq. This is from the Seattle Times in Washington. The Army accused 1st Lieutenant Aaron Watada of missing his brigade's troop movement to Iraq, twice speaking contemptuously of the president, and three acts unbecoming of an officer. The alleged actions are violations of the Uniform Code of Military Justice. The charges come about a month after Watada announced his decision not to deploy with the 3rd Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division, at a June 7th news conference with opponents of the Iraq War. His attorney, Eric Seitz, expected Watada to be charged for missing the troop movement, but Seitz said he was, quote, "somewhat astounded," end quote, by the other charges, which he said raised, quote, important First Amendment issues, end quote, regarding freedom of speech. In a press statement, Army officials noted that contempt charges can result from contemptuous statements towards the president and other public officials. The contempt charges resulted in part from a June 7 statement where Watada accused President Bush of, quote, betraying trust, end quote, by using deception to initiate the Iraq War, according to documents provided by the military. After the hearing that is set in the upcoming near future, the investigating officer will make a recommendation of whether the charges merit a court-martial trial. And also, Bush told Cheney to discredit diplomat critical of Iraq. This is from The Guardian. Suzanne Goldenberg. President Bush directed his vice president, Dick Cheney, to take personal charge of a campaign to discredit a former ambassador who had accused the administration of twisting pre-war intelligence on Iraq. It emerged yesterday. The revelation by the National Journal, a respected weekly political magazine, said that Mr. Bush took a personal interest in countering damaging allegations by the former ambassador, Joe Wilson, reveals a White House that was extraordinarily sensitive to any criticism of its pre-war planning. It also returns the focus of the criminal investigation into the outing of a CIA agent to the White House only weeks after the senior aide, Karl Rove, was told he would not face prosecution. The Journal said Mr. Bush made the admission in a July 24, 2004 interview in the Oval Office with Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald, who was leading the investigation into the outing of the CIA agent, Valerie Plame. Ms. Plame is married to Mr. Wilson, who says her cover was broken in retaliation after he accused the administration of knowingly using false information on Saddam Hussein's weapons program. According to National Journal, Mr. Bush told prosecutors he directed Mr. Cheney to disclose classified information both to defend his administration and to discredit Mr. Wilson. There was no immediate comment from the White House. The Office of the Special Prosecutor also declined to comment yesterday. And finally, real fast, I'd also like to bring a special report on a New Haven, Connecticut assault. This is courtesy of the Campus Anti-War Network. On June 27th at 5 p.m., five anti-war activists heeded the national call to action in support of Lieutenant Aaron Watada and Suzanne Swift, which we have talked about earlier on the show, who are soldiers that are facing punishment for refusing to deploy to Iraq. They peacefully chanted and held signs while passing out information on the resisting soldiers and counter-recruitment literature. Although an officer called the police, they engaged in civil discussions with various soldiers and pedestrians and were invited back for the next day when the colonel would be in town. They left chanting, "We'll be back. See you tomorrow." The activists kept their word and returned the following day with four times as many people. Things started out peacefully, but that quickly changed when an aggravated Marine officer began yelling and sent a young recruit to retrieve a baseball bat. He lunged wildly at the protesters with the bat in their faces while threatening physical violence. The activists did not respond in any way and tried to defuse the situation peacefully. One activist pulled out their cell phone to take a picture. The Marine pushed two activists off the curb into the street and knocked the phone out of the other activist's hand. He picked up the phone, erased the picture, and only after police arrived at the scene did he back down. Meanwhile, his fellow soldiers stood back and did nothing. When the police arrived, the Marine was still holding the bat. Yet the police approached the protesters immediately. The Marine was allowed to leave the scene while with the phone he had taken and returned to his duties, training the Junior Marine Corps. Meanwhile, the police insisted that the protesters had provoked this reaction from the Marine by exercising their free speech rights. He insisted that they move their protest to the opposite side of the street. When asked politely by protesters why they were required to do this, pointing out that they were on a public sidewalk, he declared, quote, "This is my sidewalk," end quote. He implied that if they did not move, they would be arrested when he said, quote, "You can do whatever you want, but in the end, I'll win," end quote. He then proceeded to call in police paddy wagons to intimidate them. After 45 minutes, the phone was returned, but the police refused to divulge the identity of the Marine. Throughout this outrageous incident, the activists maintained composure and did absolutely nothing to aggravate the situation. They immediately called a member of the National Lawyers Guild and other allies. Upon some discussion and legal advice, the protesters moved to the opposite side of the street to avoid escalating the situation. At this point, the news cameras arrived and the protesters continued to chant loudly until the soldiers went home and their offices closed. So, they demand a public apology from the Marine Corps and New Haven Police Department, and that the officer that assaulted them be removed from his duties and provide appropriate counseling but not jail time. that their free speech rights are guaranteed in all public places, including in front of the recruiting station, and that Lieutenant Aaron Watad and Suzanne Swift and other jailed war resistors are given more of a fair fight, and to fund GI healthcare and to bring the troops home now. And that was courtesy of the Campus Anti-War Network, and I think James has a little song for you.
Yeah, it's a little Frank Sinatra to get you guys going.
Well, the south side of Chicago, it's the baddest part of town. And if you go down there, you better just beware of a man named Leroy Brown. Now Leroy, more than trouble, he stood about 6'4". All the downtown ladies call him treetop lover. All the studs, they call him sir. And he's bad, bad Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town. Better than Hoagie Brown, and meaner than a junkyard dog. Now Leroy, he a gambler, and he liked his fancy clothes. He liked to wave his diamond rings in front of everybody's nose. He got a custom Continental, he got an Eldorado too. He got a .32 gun in his pocket for fun. He got a razor in his shoe. Yeah, he's bad, bad Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town. Badder than old King Don, and he's meaner than a junkyard dog. Well, Friday about a week ago, Leroy is shooting dice. And at the edge of the bar sat a lady named Doris, and she sure looked nice. Well, he laid his eyes upon her, and the trouble soon began. And Leroy Brown, he learned a lesson about messing with the wife of a jealous man. Yeah, he's bad, bad Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town. Better than old King Kong, and meaner than a junkyard dog. He's bad, he's bad Leroy Brown, the baddest man in the whole damn town. Better than old King Kong, meaner than a junkyard dog. Yeah, he's better than old King Kong, than a junkyard dog.
Ruff, ruff. Yeah, and we're back here. I'm gonna give you guys a little media piece. This is from the BBC and the Voice of America about Egyptian paper law. Several hundred journalists and twice as many riot police clogged the sidewalk outside Parliament as lawmakers debated Egypt's controversial press law. The past few years have seen an upsurge in the number of opposition and independent newspapers for sale on the streets of Cairo, but on Sunday there were none. At least 25 independent and opposition papers observed a one-day strike to protest the proposed press law, which local journalists see as tightening restrictions on the media. President Hosni Mubarak promised 2 years ago that he would abolish prison sentences for media offenses. But one provision of the new draft allows the jailing of journalists who accuse government officials of financial corruption. Parliament has already started debating the bill, and there is little hope that it will be defeated. The ruling party has a crushing majority in the assembly, and many members would prefer it if the press were less free to delve into their affairs. The Egyptian press has become remarkably bold in the past 2 years, carrying direct criticism of the president and of senior officials. But now, many feel that with the elections out of the way and the U.S. no longer pressing for reforms, the relative freedom of the recent past could be about to end. The head of the Egyptian Journalist Syndicate, Galif Aref, said, "If it is approved as it is, we will keep opposing it. We will keep working to defeat it," he says. "We will keep fighting for a just law that will allow the press to fulfill its role." And yeah, I'm going to cruise out for this song a little bit, and then I'm going to come back with a little interview with Matt Johnson about his trip to Hong Kong.
Yo, and also, if you want to call in, we're now getting to our community call-in segment, so this isn't exclusive to us and Matt. You can also come in and say your piece. You can ask him a question about his experience to Hong Kong or anything else we've talked about the show or anything else pertinent. So if you want to call in, the number is 301-314-8800. Again, 301-314-8800. It's that Fresh Radio piece, a counterbalance to the fair imbalance. Check out the site at freshradiopiece.com. You should also check out WMECradio.com. Down here, you should come to the station from 6 to 9, also on Sundays, Live Rail, or Third Rail Radio. It's some live music. You know, hit a message up to some of the DJs if you want to come check out their show, or just come and say hi. You could also go on MySpace, LiveJournal, and all that good stuff. So yeah, WMECradio.com and that FreshRadioPiece.com, a counterbalance to the fair imbalance. That Fresh Radio piece, and we've got a special guest today, Matt Johnson. Would you like to say hi again, man?
Yeah, definitely would. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good, pretty early. Still asleep, but you know, hanging in there. So, you went abroad recently, man. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it was a program for journalism. I got in pretty much because I'm in the J school, Philip Merrill, who God rest his soul, but his school helped me get into this program called Summer Studies in Asia, where I went to Hong Kong for about 3 weeks and spent another maybe week and a half in Shanghai and Beijing, which for all you guys should know is in mainland China, you know, the so-called communist mainland China. But yeah, and it was really great. It was a great time, and I went mostly not just to study, but also because I have three friends from Hong Kong that I met last year in my dorm on campus, and hung out with them and had some fun. Met some guys from all over the world. You know, it was good.
So, when you were out there, man, tell me about the political situation, what the climate was out there, that kind of thing. Because I've never been there. I mean, I hear things. We all hear things. Who knows what to believe? So I'd like to hear it from a primary resource.
Oh, thanks. I mean, yeah, it's a good question. Really good. And I'll just tell a little story to set it up. That when I was going to go to Baltimore, it's going to make sense in a second. But I went to the fireworks at the Inner Harbor on July 4th, and I was in the light rail, and these high school girls, one of them was, she said, from South Korea, and they were talking about, talking about the North Korea situation, and then they mentioned China, and they were like, well, you know, North Korea and China, they're buddies, and they're the same, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute, you know, you guys don't know what you're talking about, because if you go to China, I mean, North Korea is a total police state, everything's controlled, you can't, if you go there one of my professors from Hong Kong actually went there, and he said, you go there with a camera, they confiscate your film. If it's a digital camera, they look through the pictures. If you take anything they don't like, they delete it. They follow you to the bathroom. Everything is controlled in media. But you go to China, and you think that it would be, but it's really not. I mean, there is only one party that has any power, and that's the Chinese Communist Party. But on the streets, you wouldn't look in this place and say police state, not at all. You'd walk around, you see people smiling, you see people holding hands in public, you see people going to the movies, going shopping, working outdoors, you know, and they actually wear sort of a dress shirt and pants even when it's real hot outside, and you know, it's not at all what you'd expect. So I'd say, I mean, for a one-party system, it's pretty nice.
Ha ha, I've heard otherwise, but all right, well, I'd like to get more into that. Where'd you travel to exactly? Like, did you branch out beyond those major cities that you were talking about?
Well, speaking of control, I mean, the program was pretty controlled in that we only got to see Shanghai for about 4 days and then Beijing for about 6 days. But we did do a significant amount of study in Hong Kong and in the mainland itself. And we focused mostly on the media. So we didn't get too much into the political situation or things like that, but we did have a chance to talk to a lot of locals and things like that, and people, you know, who know what they were talking about. And so, well, you said you've heard otherwise. What have you heard?
We did a piece on Falun Dafa, Falun Gong.
Oh.
Are you familiar?
Yeah, there's a paper that's published in Hong Kong called the Epoch Times. It's not published in Hong Kong, but I read it in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I think it's published in, like, this country somewhere. I don't remember.
I think up in New York or San Francisco.
San Francisco, I think it might be. But, yeah, they make all kinds of claims about the party in China that they harvest live organs. I've asked a lot of people about this. I don't think a lot of people consider this a legit source of information in Hong Kong. Because in Hong Kong, they're very critical about China. I don't know if you guys know the difference between Hong Kong and China. But Hong Kong is considered a special administrative region. And it really has a system just as capitalist as this one. And its government is not a democracy, but at the same time, they have free speech, free press, free association, a freedom of assembly. They assemble every year to mark the Tiananmen massacre on June 4th. I went to it, and it was just everything like we see in D.C. It wasn't like police standing around, you can't say this, can't do that. They hand out, you know, leaflets, everything. And they can, you know, and I don't think a lot of people consider the claim about the organ harvesting or anything like that accurate. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, there's definitely oppression to any religious or any kind of group that goes against the Chinese Communist Party. So it's definitely not free in that sense. But the general rule is if you stay out of politics, you're fine.
I guess, I mean, would you want to talk a little bit more about the media there? Because I've heard a lot of different, like, headlines, you know, in the past or whatever, about the Chinese media and how, like, constricting it is. So, I mean, you just describe it as free. I just wanted to see what you had to say about it.
Well, I didn't say that. The media is free in Hong Kong. In China, it's far from free. It's, I mean, it's interesting because we went to the China Daily, which is the main English language newspaper. I heard almost no one reads it, but they still put it out. It's a website. You could go to it right now and check it out and read something about you'd no doubt see something about Hu Jintao, the president of China, you know, doing something good. You'd hear a lot of positive news about China. You wouldn't hear any negative aspects, and there's certain topics that would be completely avoided. They have the Chinese Central Television, CCTV, which we went to the studio, and it's, you'll notice, you'll go on there, they have all kinds of programming. They have cartoons, they have sports, they had World Cup coverage, but you're not going to see any in-depth analytical controversial reporting about something that China doesn't want to talk about, like anything. I mean, anything that's coming up at the time. And that's pretty much how it is that there's a very, very, not what you would say tight control. It's not that they take the draft, they come, it's not like the Communist Party members come into the office and say, okay, let's see your budget, no, do this, do that. They send a list of guidelines, and a lot of these guidelines are sent through email, and some of them have been published, which results in like a big time jail sentence for whoever did that. And it says pretty much, this is what you avoid this week, this is what you should talk about. And sometimes those lines are bent and sometimes they're broken, and usually there are consequences. But you'll notice that in China, it's not this one central glaring party. There's a lot of factionalism, and there's provincial leaders. And sometimes if you target those provincial leaders for a scandal piece, you could say, well, this provincial leader is going against the Communist Party. The Communist Party will even be appreciative of that information. So there's a lot of ways that some investigative reporting is coming out in China, but as a whole, it's not what we expect here, even though the Chinese Constitution guarantees free press. You don't see that.
Yo, so Matt, about your experience to China, I mean, overall, what could you say, like, what would you recommend for people who are interested in going over there themselves, things of that nature?
What I'd say is don't think that this is really something that's a risk to your physical well-being or your mental well-being. I mean, you can't drink the water over there, but other than that, you're going to be fine. And you're not, unless you go to in the center of Tiananmen Square, which is in Beijing, which is one of the places we went, right in the middle. Unless you go there and try to unroll a poster that says something against the government, like Hu Jintao is Satan or something, and they probably wouldn't even understand it anyway. But unless you try to do something like that, you're not going to get in any trouble. I mean, I almost walked into a Communist Party headquartered building, and all they did was point and say, get out of here. They didn't, and probably I didn't understand what they said. I mean, it was in Chinese, but you can read gestures, and I knew what they wanted. But and that was in the middle of the night. So, but no, they don't care really about foreigners. If anything, they you're ignored. The common people are just as sweet as the common people in America, probably sweeter. I mean, they're not as loud and obnoxious as we are sometimes. And it's a really nice place to go. It's not what you think. There's a lot of pollution, so I would worry about that more than getting arrested or kidnapped. But it's really, I mean, I haven't been a lot of places, obviously. I haven't been to the countryside. I've seen probably less than 1% of the country, I'm pretty sure that in the major cities, I mean, you don't have to worry. If you go out in the countryside, it's a lot more difficult, and you just, as long as you refrain from anything political, then you should be fine.
Well, thanks a lot for talking about your experience. And actually, I think we have a second guest. He's walking in right now. Wait a minute. Let me cue the music real fast. Hit off whatever other song, if there is one playing. If there's not, then we're straight. Let me get this real going.
What's up, everyone out there, listeners? Should I just go right for the plug, or?
Yeah, man, go right.
Well, if you're enjoying the music here and a little bit of the news, you might want to be listening to Wednesday Morning Wake Up with Jeremy. That's me. Tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Wednesday. It's always pretty good songs, interesting stories, refreshing news, and trivia. It's the best way to wake up on Wednesday morning, guaranteed.
Yo, man, you, seen as we're, public affairs and politics and all that good stuff, Anything interesting you've been reading these days? In fact, I actually, Matt just saw Inconvenient Truth yesterday, and you both
good movie.
Given me the impression that, you know, it's something that has had a profound effect on your head. How do you feel today about, like, the environment in such a situation?
Well, I look behind me right now at the South Campus dining hall window, and it is a beautiful day, but I hope to see more beautiful days like this that aren't 200 degrees outside with polar ice caps melted.
And that's Jeremy Speckman for you. Is there anything you'd like to say, last few words before we play a song?
Current temperature outside, 86.2 degrees.
What's the Metro Watch looking like out there?
I hope it's not that crowded, because I really just, it just irks me when I get off at Chinatown and I go one stop to Metro Center, and it is like a sardine can.
Sardine can?
Yeah.
Like, what does it feel like to be a sardine in a can?
Well, I usually kind of let, I only take it one stop, so I let everybody sort of get on before me, even though the train's already packed. And then, like, literally as the doors, they're like, doors closing, and there's literally not a single bit of room in the car. I jam my way on, and, like, people just, like, give me a look like, you. Well, bad word. And then I ride it for, like, 40 seconds, and as soon as the doors open, like, literally as the doors open, I don't even walk off the train. I'm, like, thrown off the train by inertia.
Well, it's a pleasure having you, as always.
I should write a story about that.
Yeah, you should. That's another thing. Check out this man's show if you want to hear a story or two. I'm sure you could say more
about
that.
A good one tomorrow about a certain pen and a certain lady.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
He made me think about something that I guess you don't typically do, kind of an escape from reality, although it was like its own paradigm within reality.
That's all you can do in this world, just escape reality.
All right, man, well, yeah, stick around, but I'm going to play a little song that Diego had lined up for us. It's from this guy, Hakum. It's called Going Home. Here we go.
Una dedicación para el viaje hacia adentro.
We don't fight harder, we only fight smarter. Don't fight fire with fire, we fight fire with water. Times expire for lies, we know the picture's larger. So we riding tones, going home, right to the throne. We don't fight harder, we only fight smarter. Don't fight fire with fire, we fight fire with water. Times expire for lies, we know the picture's larger. So we riding tones, going home, right to the throne.
We march on, past the break of dawn, through the shadow, while with scholars armed with the machine too. And manpower, what you thought, we gon' walk through that same same old path, forgetting rich, then switching up, burned by that pillow hat. If you hear shit, there's always a catch. Them crackers steal your land and turn around and set it back. With a dream to own the deed, instead you get a lease. I hand them cash and watch them laugh. When you ask for your receipt, they tell us shut up. To sit down on the seat with belief and pass the faith. Journal sale make you leap to your feet. Now you're filled with the ghost, cause he done cast the spell. Not some hocus pocus, witches group. I see motives totems killing you. Host of hopes consider truth that theology's killing you. You stumble on your own excuse, but I'm the one that's tripping through. Y'all got it twisted, man, my feet are firmly planted. Jeans are deeply rooted upon this planet Earth I'm standing on. So save your lecture, land and water's not the venture. Cause intellect the lens to where your ego wouldn't lecture. We could go straight back to Africa through Mexico, pa. I'm moving forward, going home, we're home wherever you are.
We don't fight harder, we only fight smarter. Don't fight fire with fire, we fight fire with water. Times expire for lies, we know the picture's larger. So we riding tones, going home, right to the throne. We don't fight harder, we only fight smarter. Don't fight fire with fire, we fight fire with water. Times expire for lies, we know the picture's larger. So we riding tones, going home, right to the throne.
Understand. study of Mr. Marcus Garvey, with a presidential influence stronger than Lee Harvey. Call me crazy, but if it's truly the land of the free, home of the brave, while we always under surveillance, it's taught to be afraid. Military raids stem from terror warnings. Level arming got you packing all of your belongings. Calling on my free thinkers. The brink of war is at hand, and home court advantage is determined by land. I done span the globe, looking for something that I can own, but there's no place like home. Sierra Leone is calling me, and when I bring in the law, you gonna see about a million rebels busting off metal at the authorities. Majority leaders despising my views, starting coups, BBC World News, steady recording my views and opinions. Preachers say the Lord will forgive them, but I don't listen, cause I'm too busy hymning that swing low, sweet chariot. Carry me home, back to Sierra Leone. If I die, bury these bones in the earth, forget your hurt, keep carrying on. Don't live in denial, just smile, my nigga, we coming home.
We tried to barter with them, they called it barbarism and needed salvation, but it didn't come with Charles' religion.
Not at all.
This here's beyond suspicion, the facts are known, and it's up to those that know to guide the rest of them home.
And you're getting, you're waking up with that fresh radio piece on WMUC here. We're about to get into our fresh piece. It's where we get into our in-depth reporting. We got a few interviews for you. First one's with Michael Berg. He's running for representative in Delaware now, but he got into the news a lot after his son was executed by Zarqawi. And yeah, he's been down here with the troops home fast. Doing that, we met, me and Christian met him, we were doing stuff with them, and it's been, yeah, he's a real good guy. Christian got an interview with him. Yeah, anything else you want to say about that interview, because you were there? But
yeah, I would like to say that this man right here is a very down to earth simplistic man who told me on the side, you know, he's kind of disgusted with how the media